Sponsored by the Law Offices of Joe Pippin. Learn more at attypip.com.
Ask an attorney about Florida law. Ask an attorney. Just give him a call.
This is Ask an Attorney, all about Ask Florida law with attorney Joe Pippin. If you have a legal question, call Joe right now in Tampa. Call 813-287-5700. Anywhere else, toll free at 877-943-9673. That's 877-943-9673. The law office is open. And now your host, Joe Pippin.
Hey, good morning. Welcome to Ask an Attorney, all about Florida law. I'm attorney Joe Pippin, practicing attorney. The law office is open. If you have a legal question, I'm more than glad to help you if I can. You have a toll-free number, 877-943-9673. That's 877-943-9673. Your question can be just about anything. Doesn't even have to be a legal question, just a problem you have. If I can help you, be more than glad to try. Why worry about something if you have someone to talk to? And that's the whole purpose of the show, is to be here to talk to you, answer your legal questions, hopefully get you pointed in the right direction, give you peace of mind. Hey, peace of mind is very important. So if you're worried about something, why not call 877-943-9673. That's 877-943-9673. Phone lines are open. Question can be about wills, trust, probate, guardianship, power of attorneys, health care, surrogate powers, guardianship. Can be just about any area of law if you have a legal question. Personal injury, traffic tickets, maybe a neighbor did something inappropriate that you would like to know what your legal rights are. If you have a legal question, again, toll-free number, 877-943-9673. Ask an Attorney is heard on multiple stations around the state of Florida, broadcasting today from Tampa. Tampa has a family of stations that carry the program, 570, 910, 860, 930. They all have FM components, too, that spread all over Florida. Also, you might be listening on 90.3 FM coming out of Haines City, Florida. Covering part of Central Florida, WBOB in Jacksonville, covers St. Augustine and up past Jacksonville and all the way toward Gainesville. They have an FM component, 101.1. Also, you might be listening in Sun City Center, have a community station there, 96.3 FM. And also an FM component there that at 101, I think it's 101.1. A lot of the stations have FM components that carry the program as well. Formerly nationally syndicated years ago, it was in like 39 states and 88 cities. Ask an Attorney has been on and airing since 1984. Let's go to Bob in Tampa. Hey, Bob.
Hello.
What can I do for you, sir?
I have a question. My mother, who's 91, almost 92, she sold the property. She's got some money. I don't know what exactly. She never tells us. But anyway, maybe $100,000 to $200,000. And she wants it to avoid a probate situation. So she's thinking about a trust, but what she's noticed so far is that legal people charge a lot of money to do that. So I guess what I'm looking for is a cost-effective way to take her funds and put them in a trust without a bunch of legal fees.
Well, I don't mind discussing my fees with you. We publish them on our website. Our website, we have a fee schedule that we post. So if a single person came in to do a will, will is $150, a durable power of attorney slash healthcare surrogate is $150, a living will is $75. Those are the documents that most people do that do wills. So $375, but that would go through probate. There are some assets that would probably go through probate. If you did a living trust, you get all of those documents plus a trust, plus deed the house to the trust, and it's $795. Now, I hear stories every day where people charge, attorneys charge $2,000, $3,000 for basically the same thing. So you just need, some people just need to shop around a little bit. You want to know what the attorney's experience is, you know, how long they've been in business, how long they've done estate planning, maybe how many approximate number of how many estate plans they've done, and what their cost is. Our firm has done over 50,000 estate plans. It's basically, I have other attorneys that practice in other areas, but it's primarily what I do is estate planning. And we have a flat fee schedule.
And how do we get a hold of you?
All right, you're in Tampa, so you can call the 727 number, 586-3306, and go to extension 200. A lot of my clients were able to, sometimes if they would prefer a phone appointment to get started, we do have a phone appointment to discuss things. I get information. If they're ready to proceed, send them drafts of documents, and then we have an in-person meeting to go over the documents and sign. The person is uncomfortable with the first appointment being a phone appointment. I'm glad to do an in-person first appointment as well. All good? All right, I guess Bob's not there. Okay, Bob, I'll be glad to talk to you further. Let's go to Ted in Clearwater. Hey, Ted. All right, do we... All right, Ted, let's go. Let's try Kathy in Clearwater. All right, Kathy, you there? All right, for some reason we've lost phone connection here, but we will get that all straightened out here in a few minutes. If you have a legal question, you have a toll-free number, 877-943-9673. That's 877-943-9673. Phone lines are open, I hope. And we'll continue our taking calls here in just a few minutes. So a lot of people think, you know, a lot of people even that have wills think that they're safe from probate. Probate is the proving process of getting assets out of a deceased person's name. So you die even with a will, it's a good chance that will, and you have something, a home or a personal asset, checking, savings, money market account. You have some asset that's in your name and you're deceased. Well, then the asset's in a deceased person's name, and then there's going to go through probate. So our first caller there was saying mother was worried about, didn't want her estate to go through probate. And is there a cost-effective way to not go through probate? Some people decide to put assets in joint names. So if you do that in joint names, the asset becomes partly owned by the other person, and if they get a lawsuit, divorce, accident, lawsuit, it could be in jeopardy. Let's go back to Ted in Clearwater if we can. Ted?
Yes, how are you?
All right. Sorry, we got a little phone problem there, but we got it straightened out now.
Yeah, that's good. The question was, I drove for Uber for almost 3 years. I did, oh God, 7,000 trips. I ended up with close to a 4.8 star rating, which if you have any familiarity, is pretty hard to maintain, you know, that kind of number.
Yeah,
you
no,
know?
That's great. 4.8 is great with an Uber driver.
And about a year ago at Christmas time, you can get suspended in a heartbeat. You don't even know why. All of a sudden, you stop. Your account is on hold pending an investigation. You know, one person says one thing, and you're on hold until it gets resolved. And I've been through it a few times, and this last one, it was between Christmas and New Year's, and I didn't get back to them right away. It's like I didn't want to get aggravated over Christmas. So, you know, just let it go. Well, they permanently fired me like Christmas Eve. And I chased it down and tried to reconnect. And all I could get finally out of it was a writer said something, and it had to do with something allegedly like a sexual nature of me touching somebody. Now, this is absolute BS. And I think it was a vindictive writer from a college trip I did like a month earlier. And they wouldn't even tell me which trip, what day. The short story is I'm not looking to get the job back, but could I sue... Since it's he said, she said, could I sue Uber to get as far as at least discovery in court to find out who that person was and what was allegedly said. You know, thinking that whoever made this false report would not have the backbone to back it up. And like I said, if something like that did happen of such a grotesque nature, you don't call Uber, you call a cop. You know what I mean?
Do you sign an employment contract when you get hired on with Uber?
I'm sure you did. I don't know what the fine print, but I'm sure you sign everything online. You just, you know, check a box acknowledging whatever their terms of service are.
Yeah.
But this isn't so much about...
Yeah, I understand.
Sorry, go ahead.
I understand. Well, I can give you the name of an attorney that can process this with you a little bit and tell you what the cost would be.
Yeah.
If you want to email me, I will send you his, in this case it's a he, I will send you his name and phone number. And if you send me an email with your number on there and ask me to forward this to an attorney to discuss this with, I will send it to him and copy myself and ask him to call you and copy me on his response. I'd like to know that myself. I think you can, anybody can sue anybody. So the answer is, can you sue for the information? Yes. Whether you actually get it or not probably depends on, you know, a lot of different factors that have to go into the equation. One of them is, let's see, your employment agreement that you signed.
But, I mean, if someone is saying something of
something false.
Is it slander or libel? I don't know which. I don't know. I'm not
exactly.
The money reward I'm looking for. I just want to see if I can maybe get someone to back down. And you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, if you could get the information and they just fabricated the whole thing, then that you would have a lawsuit against the person. So the problem is whether you're not going to be successful in getting the name from Uber for the person. But if you want to send me, my email address is Joe, J-O-E, at A-T-T-Y-P-I-P .com.
Sorry, Joe at A-T-T-Y?
A-T-T-Y, just abbreviation for attorney.
Uh-huh.
P-I-P,
yeah.
My first three letters of my last name, Pippin, all P's there, .com.
P-I-P.com. So, Joe at A-T-T-Y-P-I-P.com.
You got it.
Thanks a lot.
All right, Ted. All right, enjoy talking to you. Let's go to Kathy in Clearwater.
Yes, hi, Joe.
Hi.
You did my trust, but now I'm moving my homestead to New York. So I wonder, do I need to do a new trust, or what happens in a situation like that?
No, you should talk to a New York attorney, and the New York attorney most likely will either do just an amendment to the trust or a restatement to the trust. It's not like starting over with a brand new trust.
Right.
And anything, either way, if they did an amendment or a restatement, you don't have to retitle anything to a new trust because your trust will... maintain the same name and date, so you don't have to go through the retitling of assets.
Okay. Now, the other thing is, too, that also I own a share in a co-op down here, and I know you did paperwork to cover that, but is it necessary for me to notify them to retitle everything, or just having the paperwork, is that sufficient should something happen?
Well, I don't have your file in front of me. I assume when we did an assignment of interest of your mobile...
Well, I think that's co-op. What it was.
The assignment would take care of it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think and something about the occupancy agreement, I remember.
Yeah, that
was
an assignment of interest of that as well.
Okay. So that would so I don't need to notify them that they change, because I see some people seem to do that.
You can record it, but a lot of times
you don't have to.
The successor trustee would record it upon death if you never recorded during your lifetime.
Oh, okay. Very good. Okay, thank you so much.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Hey, you're listening to Ask an Attorney, all about Florida law. If you have a legal question, the phone lines are open. You have a toll-free number, 877-943-9673. That's 877-943-9673. Be glad to help you if you have a legal question or just a problem you need to talk about. Sometimes just talking to someone else who might have a different slant on things might get you pointed in a different direction. Let's go to Bob in Clearwater.
Good morning, Joe.
Hey, good morning.
I have a tenant that is divorced, and when she got divorced, she got a lifetime alimony. And since that time, I thought when I rented to her that lifetime alimony was permanent, and it they reduced it, and her ex-husband's planning on retiring, and there's questions about his ability to pay. So when they got divorced, he got the assets, which included a house and a building. And since that, he's put the house and the building in a life estate, and he put the remainder in a trust someplace in the West Indies, which we can't get a hold of. Do I have any remedies?
Do you have a remedy for your tenant? Is that the question?
Well, I don't know what to do. The only thing I can do is evict her, right? If she can't pay, does she have anything that she can do? Is there fraud by taking those assets and taking them down to the West Indies and try to hide them?
Well, let's say it this way. She probably has a right to go after the money. Now, if he retired, he could allege change of circumstances to try to get the amount adjusted. But if he has a lot of money, he moved to avoid paying her monthly alimony payment, then she probably has some rights. And whether that would be successful in getting that money back from the West Indies or wherever it is, you know, that would be up to how well the attorney can find the money and prove what happened. But I think that's going to be a longer process than, you know, if you're looking for your monthly rent. I don't think it's going to happen real quick, and it could be never, or it could be a long time before she has access to the money if she fights this out. And she's going she's going to have to pay an attorney to fight it out too. So then it's an issue whether she can afford that or wants to pursue it. And the guy himself could move to the West Indies. I mean, who knows? So there are a lot of possibilities there from it being a long time before she can get the extra money. You know, so did the guy go to court to get the amount of alimony reduced because of change of circumstances?
Yes.
And the court granted his petition?
I'm not sure of that.
Yeah, we'll find that out. Because the court, you know, there's no such thing as lifetime permanent alimony. I mean, you can always petition the court for a change of circumstances. And you're now unable to pay. And then if you prove that and the judge signs off on it, then you're basically stuck as a landlord of getting the money, and so is she. So ask her if the court signed an order that granted his petition to reduce the alimony and see what she says.
Okay.
All right, Bob. All right, thanks for calling. All right. Let's go to Joyce in Safety Harbor.
Hi, Attorney Pippin. Thank you again for making this program available.
Well, my pleasure.
I have a question about estate plan. My husband and I have been married for 1 year, and we're both divorced from our first spouses for about 20 years. And we each had some money and investments coming into this second marriage for both of us. Now, question is, can an estate plan take care of separating each of our assets for the inheritance of my one child and his three children?
Yes, an inheritance, there's two answers to this question. So an inheritance kept separate is not a marital asset subject to dividing upon divorce. So you can keep an inheritance as a separate asset and keep it separate. However, divorce might not happen and you might die. And then there's a different answer.
Right. We're not planning on divorce.
So if you die, then the inheritance kept separate going to your kids can be challenged by the right of a spouse for their spousal election that they can do, which is like 30%. So the way to have peace of mind that that wouldn't happen is to have a postmarital agreement where you waive your spousal rights to an inheritance, basically.
I see. Okay. All right.
So the postmarital agreement would take care of that. Now, if you have the other thing is if you have separate assets and you want to maintain them separately, then you would have separate trust. So you each would have a separate trust to maintain your separate assets. And if you have a postmarital agreement that says you waive your spousal right to each other's estate, then you pretty much have peace of mind that your share is going to go to your children.
Okay, so there's the way I understand you say it's a postmarital agreement.
Right.
Or separate trust.
No, they're both. You definitely need a postmarital agreement to get the spousal right waived.
I see.
And then your separate trust can leave the assets to your children, and you have peace of mind that that wouldn't be successful if it was challenged because of the postmarital contract.
Well, okay, I think we're going to make an appointment. My husband is standing here, and he's questioning, too, what we should do. So I think we'll have to make an appointment with you. And
I'd love to help you. I'd love to help you. That'd be great.
All right. Thank you so much for making this program available.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for listening.
Okay.
All right.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to Ask an Attorney, all about Florida law. I'm Attorney Joe Pippin, practicing attorney. We're about halfway through the show. If you'd like to call, you have a toll-free number, 877-943-9673. That's 877-943-9673. Phone lines are open right now. Let's go to Greg in St. Augustine.
Good morning.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. Pretty good. Dodging these raindrops, of course, you know. And other than that, you know, with the resolve of your guidance here, it'd be a fabulous day. So I was looking for a auto parts vendor, and I found one. And I made a purchase for $133 and $133, and ended up getting stiffed by the guy. You know, he took the plastic money off my plastic card and has not sent me the product, you know. And I'm a little flustered here. It was an out-of-state vendor out of Philadelphia. And I don't know if I can, you know, do small claims and how I would do a small claims the state of Pennsylvania, and
That's the answer. Though, if he's only does business in that state, you'd have to sue him where he is, because you could get a Florida judgment, but that wouldn't be valid in Pennsylvania to go after the. And then if he does, even if you get a judgment, maybe that getting a judgment sometimes is the easy part, and you get a judgment against him, and he still doesn't pay. Then you do a deposition to find out what assets he has so you can attach a car or a bank account or something. And then by that, you spend a whole lot of time in a different state and money, and it probably wouldn't be worth it, unfortunately. However, you want to get your, you were cheated out of $133, and it could be the principal of the thing. So the answer would be, yeah, you go to small claims court. But there is an economic decide as well.
So I kind of shamed him last night. He put another on a Facebook advertisement for parts again. I literally said, listen, you know, on such and such a date, you know, I made a purchase, you know, for your parts, you know, for the amount. And I essentially said, I want my money back, you know. And, of course, he responded, you know, well, you could have called me, you could have texted me. And I'd done both of these, and he just kind of, you know, led me on, you know, oh, I'll look into this, you know. It was essentially his response with no response, you know. Don't need the parts now, I just want my money back. There's
do the Better Business Report and give him a Google rating and put on Google the facts and tell him you're going to be persistent in these type of activities until you get your money back. Maybe that'll wake him up. You could send him a certified letter telling him, putting him on notice that, you know, that you're not going to, you know, what he did was wrong. He continues to try to do business, which you assume he's trying to do this to everyone else who orders a part from him, and you're going to be persistent on this until you get your money back.
And and that's essentially what I did when I wrote that little shame post, was that, buyers beware, this happened, the state and this amount, and I got a response from him. It wasn't favorable, but it was what I needed,
mm-hmm.
And of course, if he's going to, come back favorably, I don't know, and so that essentially was it, and I kind of thought,
just be a bulldog. Don't give up to get your money back.
Good to go. Thank you for your guidance and your program.
All right, thank you. All right, thank you very much. All right, let's go to Paul in Jacksonville.
Good morning, Joe.
Good morning.
My question is about home title insurance. I'm wondering if doesn't seem to be a legitimate need for such a thing, because if someone, the commercials always say, if someone can get the information about your home through a website, they create a document, they forge the document, looking as if they own your property, they take the title to a financial institution and borrow money against your home, how am I on the hook for money that someone has built a financial institution out of using a forged document?
Well, what they do is they forge a deed. They create a deed from you, sign your signature to them, have a false notary, or even just an unaware notary, have two witnesses. Mm-hmm. They could forge all of these names. They could just scribble them all. They could do this whole thing, and one person could probably forge all of these things, file a deed. Now they own the property.
So no, then, they don't own the property.
They
it's
deeded
a forged document.
Well, I know, but they deeded it to themselves, so it appears that they own it. And then they get a mortgage, or they refinance it on some type of loan where they then now have money. They always do this on properties that are paid off. So it's a free and clear property. Okay. So they commit a crime. They commit a crime and take money.
Right.
So
I can't be held responsible for someone else committing a crime. Right?
No, but you have the hassle of now fighting to get your property back. Yeah, the property.
Well, I haven't lost my property. It's someone else. The other people can't take my property because they have a forged.
They did take it though. I mean, they forged a deed where on the public records
they forged a deed.
Sir, they forged.
They forged documents.
Okay.
They can't take my house with a forged document.
Well, they did,
and
now it's for you to get to clear the title to get your property back.
They're giving too much credence to criminals. They're giving them the benefit of the doubt. I don't understand how this works. I'm the owner. I'm sitting in my house, and they say they sold it or they mortgaged it. Why can't the mortgage company?
No, they deeded it to themselves. They falsified. they committed a crime. They forged a deed. But the public records now show that they own it. So you have to fight to get that undone to prove it was a forgery before it ever comes back in your name.
So I have to prove that I'm not guilty.
Yes. Get your property back.
It's all right.
Hey, Paul. So I'd love to talk to you about this off the air. A little bit further, but I can't really explain it any better than I just did. But thanks for calling. Well, let's go to Gary in Clearwater.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. I have a dear friend. I'm also his medical surrogate and so forth, power of attorney. He's well set up. He's in a rehab right now. He's a 95-year-old veteran.
Mm-hmm.
And right now he's on Medicare, and everything is covered at the moment, but the doctor's indicating that this is an end-of-life issue. he just has kind of given up and won't eat and so forth.
Is hospice involved?
I have spoken to hospice. At this point, I don't have them involved because the facility has indicated that as soon as they're involved, the facility goes to, you know, he has to pay for his own services, and the Medicare is done, and, you know, it's on hospice. Once hospice comes in, they're done, is what they're telling me.
But
so,
that's
I mean,
not,
that's fine. If
well, listen, that's not a bad thing, though. My experience with hospice is they offer a great, great service, and most of it's covered by Medicare. And they provide services that the facility may or may not provide. And they'll come in and do, they'll administer medicine. Somebody falls, they're going to come in there and look at them and provide, you know, to get them bandaged up, get them to a doctor if necessary, make appointments for the person. I mean, hospice does a whole lot of things that people are not aware of that's covered by Medicare.
Yeah, no, I have experience with them, unfortunately, from a previous situation with my sister, but I know they're awesome. But basically, I would have to take him home unless I could get him in the hospice facility. And that's something I haven't looked into yet, but I plan on it. But let me ask you this. It's too much for a phone call, I'm sure, but they're trying to convince me to sign documents and get Medicaid involved. This man has some assets, and it's everything's set up very well. It's a revocable trust, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
And
Now, are you family?
I am his closest to family that has all of his legalities.
Does he have family? Does he have family?
He has a son in Sebastian, Florida.
So he has one son. Is the son involved in all it with his dad?
He's not involved.
Doesn't want to be involved.
He visits and so forth, but...
Okay. Well, if he's in a nursing home, when he's going to stay in a nursing home, there is a way to move assets around to maximize what can be kept and maximize government benefits. You know, nursing homes can be, you know, $8,000 to $15,000 a month. And there is a way, it would be beneficial, and you're his power of attorney health care surrogate. Are you there? Did I lose you? Okay. Well, let me continue talking for a few minutes on that. Maybe we'll get you back on the line here. So there is a way to look at what you have, look at assets, and decide whether or not to, particularly if you're in a nursing home. Now, I think a lot of times a person who like that should use their own funds to maximize their care and stay at home if they can. You know, stay independent and use your money for in-home care and to maximize it. But there are other people who would prefer to move assets around a little bit, maximize government benefits, and have the legacy for the remainders. I mean, there are all types of different people and all different types of people how they look at this. But I'd be all for remaining independent for as long as you can and use your money for in-home care, and you have to pay for it yourself, so be it. It's your money, and you should maximize your use of it for your own benefit. If the family was very, very involved, like the son is very, very involved, then the son has some options and should discuss with the parent what they would like to do. And so forth. There are lots of ways to approach this same question from all kinds of different angles. You know, maximize your own care in your own home using your own money, or maximize what you can save and leave on in maximizing government benefits. We have a full-time Medicaid VA attorney that offers a free consult on this matter as well. You're listening to Ask an Attorney, all about Florida law. If you have a legal question, our phones are on the blink a little bit this morning, but you have a toll-free number, 877-943-9673. 877-943-9673. Phone lines are hopefully be open here in a few minutes again. So if you would like to learn more about our firm, we have a website, www.attypip.com. That's www.attypip.com. On that website, we have a fee schedule. Many of the things that we do, we have a flat fee schedule. If you would like to attend one of our Zoom seminars, we have a Zoom. We did six or seven Zoom seminars last year. We did them on estate planning in general. We did them on living trust. We did them on asset protection. We did them on family law, gun trust. We did a variety of Zoom seminars. They're hour-long seminars on a particular topic. And if you'd like to receive those, I'd be glad to send them to you. You just have to request it by email, which is Joe, J-O-E, at attypip.com. Okay, I think our phone lines are working again. Let's go to Fred in Fort Walton Beach. Hey, Fred.
Hey, I had a foreclosure on the property, and the judge signed the order for foreclosure, but then subsequently it was not marked closed. It was marked voluntarily dismissed without prejudice. Would that supersede the order of foreclosure?
Well, I don't know. You told me two different things there. It was voluntarily dismissed, which means there was no foreclosure. It was a foreclosure. Was the property sold at the courthouse steps, you know, basically, and was...
No, just an order just the order was signed, but it was never acted on. And then it was voluntarily dismissed.
By the bank? Or by the lender?
By the lender, yes.
Oh, well then I would say, from what you've told me, I would say there was no foreclosure. You still own the property.
That superseded it then, right? If it's voluntarily dismissed.
Yeah, well, then it goes away. Yes, sir.
Thank you. Thank you, Joe.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Let's go to Joe in Northport. Hey, Joe. Joe, are you there?
Yes.
Okay.
How are you today?
Good, and you?
Good. I got a question about a divorce. And what would I be looking at if when this goes down? How bad? How's it going to be?
So you're in the middle of a divorce?
Well, I'm thinking of where we've been talking about getting one, and she's just going real slow with the whole process. I'm just curious about my rights, and you know. There's a pension involved. There's a minor.
Mm-hmm. Well, how long have you been married?
17 years.
Well, that's there's different categories of what happens based on 7 years or under 17 years or over 17 years. So you're right at the line of where she could wind up with half of the assets. And how old is the child?
14.
So you have mm-hmm. probably at least four more years of child support.
Yes.
Does she have an attorney?
No. Well, she says she's talking to one or finding out her options. I have a pension, which I figured she's going to get half of the pension. We have a house with a little equity in it. And then I know she's got credit card bills in her name mm-hmm. only. And I would assume that's going to come under, you know, us that we'll be taking care of them out of the, you know, savings and,
does she work?
House. Yes. And the money's pretty close. So mm-hmm. I'm wondering, would I get stuck with alimony possibly?
Well, if the money's pretty close, maybe not, but you're going to have child support payments.
Uh-huh.
And 17 then years probably is pretty close to a 50-50 division of the assets. And
which
the pension,
I'm fine with that.
Yeah, the pension will probably be split up. You know, the two of you to save attorney fees, if the two of you can come to some agreement, then that can be put on in a contract form. And if the two of you agree yourselves, instead of having attorneys duke it out as to what would be fair, if the two of you can come to your own conclusions, that all of those conclusions that you come to and agree to can be put in a property settlement agreement. And then the divorce process, I usually try to talk people out of divorce, so I'd be starved to death as a divorce attorney. But if you can... if you can put everything down on paper and agree to it yourself, it's going to make the whole process much more pleasant and easier to get through.
Would I have to keep her on my insurance plan? I know I would have to keep the child on the insurance plan, but would I be obligated or have to keep her on the insurance plan?
Well, why don't you see if you both are employed? Why don't you see if you two can mutually agree to have your companies, get insurance through each company and each be responsible for it.
Well, my company has insurance. She doesn't have insurance, and she's been under my plan forever.
Yeah, but does her company have a plan? I mean, she's the one that wants to divorce. Why reason with her that maybe she should?
I'm the one that does.
Oh, you're the one that wants to divorce. Okay, I see.
Yes.
Well, she's going to argue for it, and you're going to argue maybe against it, and the court's probably going to make you do it for her for at least a while.
Okay.
Since you've done it all along.
And then, as far as, car insurance now, I want to get my own plan. Can I go ahead and get her off my plan and start doing stuff like that, or do I have to wait for stuff like that?
Do y'all still live in the same household?
Yes.
I think the insurance company is going to not probably do it just if she's in the household and you're still married. I think once she leaves the house, if you were separated and lived apart, I think it's a chance you could get her off your insurance. If she's in the household, I doubt it.
As what if I went to a new company?
Okay, well, we're on a different question now because we're a different insurance company. I think if you're married and in the same household, I don't think you can get her off of it.
Okay, all right.
You can try. I call a couple of insurance companies and ask, but I think if she's under roof, do y'all have separate cars? Yeah, so if you're under roof, though, just call the insurance company and see if you can find one that'll do that.
Okay, and I think you've answered everything. So the cheapest and best way to probably do this is try to get it in a contract form and, agree to all this.
Yeah, once you get attorneys involved, attorney is your advocate. So if the two of you can do it yourself on a more friendly basis, then having an attorney being your advocate to fight for something, that could go either way, if the two of you can agree to it, that would be great, I would think. And if you don't agree to it, then you're going to each have an advocate that fights for your position. So it's going to be more time-consuming and expensive.
Yeah, I'm not arguing or fighting about anything. I told her I'd give half the pension, keep the child on insurance, split whatever she wanted in the house. She can have it all. It doesn't matter. And then when we sell the house, pay the credit card bills off and then split what's there and child support.
Well, she's agreeable to all that?
And at heart. She's been not willing to do really anything at this point.
I see. She's upset you're divorcing her, so she's not agreeable. So,
yes.
All right. Well, to move it along, unfortunately, to move it along, if you want to move it along, you're going to probably have to get an attorney to move it along for you.
and then just
Well, what she could do, though, is to everything you think she's agreed to. Well, she hasn't agreed to anything. You can have an attorney draft a property settlement agreement of what you think would be fair and present it to her.
Okay, and then go from there and see
where
we stand.
Yes, sir.
All right, I appreciate your time today. Thank you.
Thank you. If you'd like to call the show in the remaining moments, 877-943-9673. 877-943-9673. Let's go to Gary in Clearwater.
Hey, Joe. I'm back. I didn't hear your response. The phone went out about the 95-year-old veteran. I'm all over the hospice situation. I guess my bottom line is, the question is, they want me to apply for Medicaid this week. And
who is they? The nursing home?
Yes, the rehab. And I guess they're seeing a point where if he doesn't make any more progress, he's going to get dropped off of the Medicare insurance because he's not making progress. And they want to know, you know, how they're going to get paid. Well, we can pay them. I have control of his assets out of pocket. So I don't see, if it's truly an end-of-life issue, why I should pay this $5,000 approximately to apply for Medicaid, when, you know, we could buy enough time to get him situated if it goes long-term ourselves.
Well, how much, I'd have to know some information. I don't know if you want to share this on the air or not. How much, his home would be exempt from the Medicaid process. So how much other money
There's
does
no
he
home.
How much
it's
other
investments?
Yeah, how much are
1.8 million. Yeah. So we can take care of this out of pocket to get him situated if it goes long term. Why apply for Medicaid?
Yeah. So Medicaid, are they suggesting a personal service contract?
I'm not familiar with that term.
I don't know. Do they have an attorney involved? Are they recommending a Medicaid attorney involved?
They have their own Medicaid attorney. This company they're referring me to actually handles the application process. Mm-hmm. Of course, they charge $4,000 to $5,000, and it's non-refundable.
But it's a non-attorney firm.
Yes.
I would.
Private firm.
They have so many of these non-legal attorney. Non-attorney Medicaid application companies, and I think you'd be better served if you want to talk to a Medicaid attorney. Just deal with one. I have one on my staff. I think you'd be better off to he'd give you a free consult.
Okay, and, can I email you to get that information?
Yeah, email me, and I'll email it to his name is John Frazier. And I would hold. Okay. I would hold off on that. I would not use personally. I would not use a Medicaid application company that's not an attorney. See, they have an attorney that they use on these things, but then you have a middleman making money on the deal that's not licensed to practice law, basically.
Well, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, send me an email. I'd love to talk to you about it. All right.
Could you give it out one more time?
Joe, J-O-E, at attypip.com.
Thank you.
All right, Gary. All right, you're listening to Ask an Attorney All About Florida Law. We're here every Saturday morning, a little bit right after 8 o'clock, and more than glad to be here and answer your legal questions. If you enjoy the show and think it's helpful, the biggest compliment, of course, would be to tell other people about the show. If somebody tries to ask you a legal question and you're not an attorney, tell them about Ask an Attorney All About Florida Law on every Saturday morning at 8 o'clock. If you're listening to the Salem stations, and also 96.3 FM in Sun City Center, they replay the show at 5 o'clock on Sundays. So if you heard something that you'd like someone else to hear, tell them about the rebroadcast Sundays at 5 p.m. on 570-910 and 96.3 FM in Sun City. Hey, you have a great, great weekend. So long. Thanks for listening to Ask an Attorney All About Florida Law.